Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. I'm Daniel Wilcox, and today I'm joined by...
Luke Condor with a K.
And our special guest for today...
Clark Chamberlain, with two C's.
Fantastic. Clark helps authors to transform their stories into emotionally resonating books. Clark is the editor-in-chief over at Sterling & Stone, and he's also the creator of the Book Editor Show podcast, and he has a bar that he made himself from a big box of books.
That is correct.
So today we'll be tickling Clark about his secrets of story editing and how we as indies can make better stories. So does that all sound good? Does that sound like a good theme to run with?
I watched that video earlier today, Clark, of you making that bar. It was really interesting. I really want to make one myself.
Oh yeah, I know. Like it. So I used to build houses. So in another life, and I was remodeling for the office, and I found that box of books. I was like, these crappy books. Like, because if you don't know, if you haven't watched the Bad Book Bar, the little thing. So these were like my first book that I ever did, and it was the wrong edited copy was loaded on, and so like they're all misprinted, and yeah. But putting that together, it's down in the office right now. I love that piece. It's just beautiful. Yeah,
it's cool. Yeah. Would you ever sell it?
I'd love to do something like that.
I don't think I would ever sell it. Like, that would be a real hard sell.
Yeah.
My dream with it is to do a podcast vlog and travel around to writing conventions and call it The Drinking Author and, like, just sit down and drink with authors and talk about writing.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
A genius idea. I did notice your little tipple of whiskey at the end in your crystal glass.
Yep.
Just a dream. It's just what we want. So what have we been working on? What are we up to at the minute?
Well, I've been doing some first drafting, up to 40,000 words of our next novel, Dan. And also promoting the Kickstarter campaign. Trying to get people to back it. I won't go into too much detail yet because I'm a big whip. But I'll leave it at that for now.
I thought that it might be.
Yeah.
How about you, Clark? What are you up to?
So I just got back from a writer's conference. I presented on a couple of different panels on editing for anthologies and also military culture, which is really cool. And right now, the big thing I'm working on is getting a 6-hour video course put together on the hero's journey and how you can use that in all genres, not just in fantasy.
Wow.
Nice. That sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a you pay for thing, or is that going to be out of the goodness of your heart?
So I think there will be some pay for it. Put that one.
All these people demanding money.
I know.
I have been working on Lazarus storming through with that again. I'm so close to the end. I'm at that point in the book where you are just sick of it. It's that final racy payoff where everything's tying together and everything's awesome. And it's fun to write and to edit and to go back through and manipulate. But it's just been a bit of a hard slog, this one, compared to how... And I know we've mentioned this before, so I won't go on about it too much, but compared to how easily They Rot seemed to just work as a storyline, this one's just had so much more needing to tweak stuff, needing to make sure that it all comes together. And I'm just wondering if part of that is where They Rot, we have kind of like an overview of where we want to travel with the story, so we can be a bit more freer with how we get there.
Yeah.
Whereas in my head with Lazarus, we planned it as 3 books, and the first one's actually turned out to be double what we planned it would be. It's nearly 100,000 words now. But it's that idea of then making sure that everything fits so that you can wrap it up and get everything within those three books where we can. Yeah, so that's been
I think it'd be worth it in the end. I think the story would be better for it. So the audience can't complain. You know, it's for their own good.
Exactly. I'm excited by it. I'm at that point now where I feel like it's nearly there. It's just that final push to get it done, and then it's on to the next one.
Yeah, yeah. Should we move on to the big whoops so I can just sort of finish the train of thought from before? Yeah. So our Kickstarter is funded for El Marvo, which is the post-apocalyptic luchador comic book. We needed to fund like the artwork and some printing costs and that kind of thing.
Have you seen any of this?
No, I have not seen the Kickstarter.
Sure. So we'll have to show you the images. The images are fantastic.
It's a luchador in a post-apocalyptic world. it's cool. It's interesting. It's quite nice to do. We funded in a week, so we've still got 3 more weeks to try and overfund, which is just gonna sort of pay us back some of the money we invested up front for like some of the art costs and stuff. So it's really good, because I think when you launch a Kickstarter, there's always that feeling of, I might look like a tit in this. I might just be dangling around like an idiot in the street, naked. But then, like when you fund, it feels like there's support there. So it feels nice.
Yeah. Congratulations! It's awesome.
It is really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I saw some of the panels originally, and from the start, it looks like a quality thing. And obviously, we were lucky enough to, I say we on behalf of Hawk and Cleaver, but you guys were lucky enough to get Will Robson involved with the cover art, and Dan Butcher's done a fantastic job, and you guys have just done, I think you've done well with pushing it without almost pushing it too hard.
Yeah, I didn't want to be constantly nagging people. I just sort of wanted to, I don't know, just try and get it out there peacefully, I guess.
That's kind of cool. Awesome. My big whoop is that I am currently in the throes of the other stories 2.0 planning. And I know we haven't mentioned too much of this. I don't know how much I will mention, but suffice to say that we've got lots of plans to basically kick it up a gear, we'll turn it up into the next level, make sure that everything's where it needs to be for people that love the other stories, that want to come back, and that we can basically just give people more for their money, which is at the minute nothing. Shall I mention the site, or go into the site a little bit?
It's up to you, man. Yeah, can do. It's part of the relaunch, isn't it?
Yeah, one of the big things is we're going to have a dedicated podcast site that sort of hosts all of our podcasts. And it's been sort of a tricky road to try and work within a budget, but to find something that's sleek, that holds what we need it to, and basically serves its purpose in a way that fits what we're trying to get across our brand. And I think it's coming together nicely. You've seen some bits of it so far, and I think it's getting to a point now where it looks like it should.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's looking good, man. What about you, Clark? What have you been, what's your big whoop?
So my big whoop is I finally cracked the plot issues that I had on a follow-up to my first novel, Another Day, Another Name. And because I made the biggest mistake of having all these multiple point of view characters, and it just was this gargantuan story, and like the second one trying to figure out how to make it work. And it finally came to me during that writer's conference. Like, I just got the last little thing I needed. And
was that
wow.
Mid panel. You were like,
mid panel. I was like, gotta go. Yeah. Hold on. I have to go write this. So, but it was just such a good feeling to sit down and replot and work out those issues and get to the end that was going to be the right one. So, feel a little more confident in working on it again.
Was it something that someone said that kind of triggered that revelation, or was it just being there, being inspired?
It wasn't anything anyone particularly said. It was just being there and getting energized again with everyone who was so excited about, sharing their stories with me when I was having conversations and that feeling, that energy that comes from there. It's like, I want to get back into my writing. Cause like this last year, all I've done is pretty much edited. Like, I released Hank Hudson in the Anubis last summer, but I mean, it was already done. And all I've been doing is editing and trying to get back into fiction has actually been tough to find the time. Plus the problem when you get into being the editor all the time, then you really have the editor's issue, like in your own head, when you're working on your own stuff. You're like, oh, this is, if it's not perfect, I can't put this out. I mean, it's gotta be nailed down, shut.
do you feel like the eyes are more on you because you're an editor. People would be like, let's find some typos here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's terrible. Even like doing like an email newsletter. Okay. Like you'll get grammar Nazis that shoot back at you. You call yourself an editor and you misplaced this period thing, you know? And like, you're just like, I'm sorry, you know,
I'm human.
We work fast, yeah. You know, yeah. As well.
Yeah, I can empathize with that. I don't know if you know this, but I was a freelance copy editor for sort of nonfiction text for about 2 years before my son was born. And I had pretty much the same problem, but one of the first catch that someone had was I changed my job title on Facebook to Danny Wilcox from Wilcox Editorial, freelance proofreader and copy editor. And about 3 weeks after I changed that, my uncle kind of popped up in a message and just went, you missed out the F in proofreader. And I was like, well, that's a great start. So,
well, see, you know, people, yeah, it's part of the sales page. Like, you know, we.
Yeah. Yeah. So is it, so you've been doing editing now for, well, tell us a little bit about sort of how you got into editing, how long you've been doing it for, and what that kind of involves for an average day for Clark Chamberlain.
So editing really came about as it was a real roundabout deal. I mean, I was editing newspaper work before, and because I used to be in journalism for over a decade. And so like I had been a copy editor and I'd done that portion, and it wasn't particularly my favorite thing to do. And when I was getting ready to launch the Hank Hudson books, I wanted to start a podcast to talk about writing, but there's like a million, I think, podcasts on writing right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a million and one now.
Yeah. So I was taking this course on from Danny Inney from Firepole Marketing. I think he calls it Maracy now. Anyway,
Go on. Yeah.
So anyway, so he had this course called Audience Builder Masterclass, and it was all talking about like making sure you have a niche audience. And so I started looking at the podcasts out there. It's like, there's no podcasts on editing. Let's do a podcast on editing. We'll just talk about writing, but we'll do it, you know, call it editing, because that's really, it's just it's all kind of the same stuff really when it gets down to it, and we'll take some stuff. And, after the first year, well, it was within 6 months, started getting requests to start doing editorial work for other people. And it just has grown and grown and grown from there. And I've just taken all of my story information, you know, and my expertise on story and the psychology of why we read and things, and then applying it to, especially to developmental editing. That's my favorite thing to do, helping people with their story and making it work and connect the right way. And so it's just been really great. But it can get super busy. So I have not slept in the last 2 days because I'm on deadline right now, and I'm pushing through like two different projects at the same time. Which is the problem with going with family to writing conventions and telling yourself I'm going to work, because it won't happen.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen. So, but I finished this morning about 3 a.m. and just have been working the rest of the day. So, but a day can be, you know, 4 or 5 hours worth of copy editing, developmental editing. We're doing the story jackets now where people send their outline, and I can go through the outline and help them see holes that are right there from the start, which can give them a really big leg up, which has been, it's been fantastic doing this work and getting to work with Sterling and Stone on top of it. Yeah. So.
Would you,
I think that's it. Go on.
Well, I was just going to say, so you saying then there wasn't any shows on editing or writing. It was all on publishing and marketing, I guess. Do you think that's a symptom of indie writing in general? Because I do feel like there's a whole thing about getting your book up the charts, getting a great cover, but I feel like there just isn't enough attention on good prose.
And there's not, because prose, let's see, Sean and Platt over at Self Publishing Podcast, we've talked a lot about this. And, you know, you've got what the new Kindle algorithm is going to be, and that's going to be, what do we call it, like a technique, you know, something that's short term. And you've got your decent prose and your really good story, and that's your long term, and no one cares about the long term, you know, because they want instant sale. But the problem is Kindle's not going to be there forever. The algorithm are going to change. A well-written story is going to last for years, and that's, indie authors need to really get this in their head that they're creating wealth products, that this is not just a sale that you're going to get for the next 3 months or the next year. You need to build a product that's going to last for your children so that they can get those royalties as well.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen if you're not paying attention to the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's something that we try and stick a balance with, because the truth of it is that when you are starting out, people do see the dollar signs, and it is that thing of you want to at least have some products behind you in order to build up that sort of rolling inflow. Mm. And it's hard striking that balance between, I want to write this fast and I want to write this well. And like you say, I know a lot of people are sort of emphasizing at the minute the write fast, the write fast, the write fast, and not sort of focusing on quality prose. So, I mean, is there any kind of advice that you would give, or that you've kind of come across, that might be good for people who do want to hit those word counts but also are trying to create something, whether that's an extra layer of editing along the way, whether that is hiring someone like yourself to kind of look at it? Or,
well, definitely work with other people. If you can't hire an actual developmental editor, you know, that you're working with people who really understand story, or at least understand the genre, to make sure that you're hitting that story the right way, that you're not having glaring elements that are missing, and doing the best that you can, but understanding that once you have established a, you know, the rolling income, that you're going back and actually paying for professional to get in there and redo those and relaunch them again. Mm. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with going back and improving things, you know, as long as it's not drastically changing the story. If you have the story, the basic elements of the story in place, you can go back and then play around with the prose and on the smaller level, you know, just to clean it up, to make it work a little better.
Yeah. Mm. What would you
getting
say
rid of all your stuff.
What would you say are like the more common story mistakes that beginning authors make?
That they rush. Okay. Not rush into the writing, but they rush into the story.
Yeah.
We don't take enough time to actually understand who the character is before the story begins, so that we can see changes that are being made throughout the story and understand why those are significant.
Yeah.
And then, for instance, it would be like jumping into Star Wars with them arriving at the Death Star, you know, hitting the tractor beam and getting pulled in. We have no idea why Luke's there. We have no idea that he was a poor farm boy, you know, that wanted some adventure in his life. We don't see any of these other things that he cared about and how the world switched when he got involved in old Obi-Wan Kenobi's damn fool mission, you know, like.
I guess this comes back a little bit to the whole developmental editing. And obviously, like we said, the story jackets that you're involved in at the minute. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that? Because it must be a huge privilege, really, to see people's work in its seed. Because I know that some people can get very, very precious about their idea before they even start typing. People will just silence it forever. So how are you kind of approaching that with people?
Yeah, so it really is an honor to, I'm getting to work with all kinds of different authors at different levels. It is them exposing, you know, something that's very new, and there might be that they don't even know where it's headed yet. And that's really cool to be a part of that initial process of the creation. And one of the things that I myself, you know, really am trying to be conscious about is not coming across and saying, this is how I'd tell the story. You know?
Yeah, that's got to be quite a fine line you've got to tread.
You do. You really do. And so it's like trying to really find, because I think our subconscious is an amazing thing. And we actually put the little pieces that are there, and sometimes we don't even see them. And so I get to go through that, and I'll see these little pieces, and I'm like, hey, if you take this idea that you've already got here and we move it up to act one and we expand it, you know, it's going to create this whole other level of conflict and tension between your main characters. And so you can find this stuff and help them expand it and see things that they hadn't even thought of before. And it's rewarding. So it's very rewarding.
Yeah, of course. I'd love to get a story jacket at some point. I mean, so if people are out there and they would like to, you know, have a look into it and see if a story jacket is right for them, what where would we send them?
Over to Sterling & Stone, and then I can just type in story jacket. That'll pull that up right there. And I'm booked for the next few months, but if you can get into there earlier, you know, you can find a good spot and we can definitely work together. I don't like to call it the poor man's developmental editor, but you know, if you can't afford the 7 cents per word that it's going to cost to do developmental editing on your story, this is a fantastic place to start. You know, this is a really great place to start. And at least that you can get the right story functioning in the right way with your genre, that you're hitting the right spots. Because, you know, each individual genre, everyone's got something they're looking for in that. It's something that they want to go back and have that same experience, only different, again and again. And so, like, that's one of the things that I help with, is making sure you're hitting those notes.
Yeah, great. So I remember when I first started doing novels and stuff, and I'd done like two drafts of my first novel, and I sent someone on Keyboards said, send me your first 5,000 words and I'll tell you your common prose mistakes. And instantly within that, she said, like, okay, so you're filtering your, there's lots of stuff here that you could change, you're not doing this right. I found that like immensely helpful, just that sort of, just someone could just say, you're not doing this right, you're not doing this right. So in terms of prose, is there anything that people need to be looking out for, common mistakes that people are making there?
Well, you know, there's the old saying, you know, the show don't tell. A lot of times things come across as just a lot of telling, or really that they are messing up in an area where it's not making sense. You know, that they have put in the pronouns are pointing to the wrong people. You know, that can happen a lot of times. You know, if you got multiple male or multiple female characters and you're starting to use she, and all of a sudden, does that she mean this character or is it the other character? And it becomes quite confusing. Staying away from, you know, adverbs are a great place, you know, your LYs in there that you can look at it and then.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Try to rework that sentence to make it stronger, because it's not that you can't use them. It's just that you want to be really sparing with them and trying to increase your ability to really describe something and connect better with the reader so they get a fuller picture of it.
Go on, Dan.
I was going to say, at the minute I'm finding that a lot of people, when you ask about people's processes, they are now, I mean, I've had it quite a few times when back in my days where I did do a lot more editing, I'd have people approach me and basically ask for a quote for a piece of text for whatever they're working on. And 9 times out of 10, they'll see the kind of cost that I was quoting. And to be fair, I was giving friend rates. I was being, compared to sort of the national average in England anyway, I was well below what people would normally pay. The first thing people would say is, yeah, but, you know, Microsoft Word picks up most of the mistakes anyway, so I might go with that. And more and more now, you've got programs, you've got extensions to your browsers like Grammarly, you've got things like Hemingway.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, Pro Writing Age. You've got all these sort of digital apps. So I'm quite curious what your view is on those, because I know what mine is.
Well, they still have yet to make a grammar program that actually can pick up the nuances of the English language. You know, it can, you know, Grammarly and Pro Writing Aid are better than pushing F7 on Microsoft Word, but they still don't replace it. You know, like, they're great to, you can clean up a lot of your stuff before you send it to someone who's going to do the line edit, but you still need to do that because they're not picking everything up. They don't understand exactly what it is that you're saying in each of the individual situations. And it's too bad. I mean, I would love it. I would absolutely love, because I'm a developmental editor, so it's not going to put me out of work. I would love to be able to have a program that caught it all, that knew it all and knew exactly what we were trying to do and put together and put out there. But it doesn't exist yet.
That's it, especially with the amount of different writing styles that people have, and you don't want to take out people's voices or people's styles. And I am one of the things I'm really finding annoying at the minute. I don't know if you guys have got the same update, but my Microsoft Word is updated and it now picks up passive voice.
I don't really use Word, to be honest. So
forever getting little blue lines, and I'm like, but there's nothing really wrong with this sentence, but Word's now just being very picky with stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't tell you how to fix it, though.
No. It's just in brackets, just shaded brackets, passive voice. Oh, all right. Cheers, Word. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
It's interesting. So I think me and Dan, we were talking about this the other day, in terms of now that I'm reading, because I've been getting into Stephen King, never read him growing up. Now I've been reading him a bit more and I'm a bit older. And he writes really flowery. he does a lot of things that I would think nowadays an editor would just take out straight away. So there's a lot of head jump, like POV jumping in there.
Yes.
There's a lot of like the adverbs that he says don't put adverbs, but his prose is full of adverbs.
Yes.
So I mean, in terms of like,
oh, some of them are ridiculous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I quite like the way he does it. But in terms of these sort of older styles and newer styles, the head jumping is the main thing for me, because I'm starting to enjoy doing it, and I know it's wrong, like in quotation marks, but are we allowed to play with it a bit more like that, or is that something we should just stick to the rules and say no to it?
So, you know, it's like I tell students in my class, the college, you can do anything when you're Stephen King. Like, you know, when you're at that point, you do whatever you want. Mm. And the rules are always just there as suggestions. I mean, this is an art. You can do whatever it is that you want to do with it. But you need to understand what it is that you're doing, you know, that you need to be making conscious decisions. You know, those trying to be able to communicate in the best way possible, though, is what we should be trying to do at the end of the day. And things like head hopping, like, well, then write omniscient. You know, be conscious about creating a narrator that's going to jump into everybody's heads and explore all these different things. There are ways to do it, you know, but go all in with it. Don't just say, well, I can do whatever I want because Stephen King did this. You know, like, just be conscious about it and understand what it is that you're trying to do. And, you know, for instance, spelling things phonetically for dialogue is one of my biggest pet peeves. And as an editor, I've worked on some anthologies and short story submissions, things. I won't even look at them when that comes across, because I'm like, that slows my reader down. Mm-hmm. That makes them stop and have to like reprocess what that word really is, because you're trying to make this person how they sound, you know. And but once you're making as much money as J.K. Rowling or Stephen King, you could spell the whole book phonetically and you would still sell all of them, all the
copies.
You'd
never want to edit Trainspotting.
The rules are there to be guides. You got to make the decision, though, because it's your name on the book and it's your sales process at the end of the day. So
I think that's quite an important point. We also, one of the things that I find quite a lot when I speak to particularly writers who say that they take their writing seriously, they say that they really want to work on their craft and that they want to sort of make their name bigger. A lot of people don't actually know the different stages of editing, and kind of do see it just as you write your work, you send it to a proofreader and it's done. What would you kind of suggest for maybe someone that's on a bit of a shoestring budget, someone that's starting out? What would you say would be the minimum layers that people should go through, and maybe just give just a very brief overview of the different levels?
Sure. So, and in fact, what you were mentioning before about pricing, you know, this can be a real issue for a lot of people, especially when they're starting out trying to get into the indie world with it. But it's something that you have to understand is that you now are the publisher, and these are costs that need to be absorbed by the publisher. So just because you can publish for free on Kindle doesn't mean that it doesn't cost anything. So you have developmental editing, you have you've got your copy editing, you've got line editing, you've got proofreading. There's another one in there that gets switched around with developmental editing. I can't think of what the term is. I apologize. So, but these are the main ones that you're going to worry about. And so the developmental editing is certainly the highest cost, because this person is going to go through and they're going to really work through everything that you're doing in the book and like make it the best possible story. Your copy editing is going to go through and they're going to look at some grammar, but they're also going to be very conscious about where your lines where your lines are in your paragraphs and making sure that the everything flows well, that it reads well, and make suggestions in that way. And the line editor goes through and just does grammar. That's all they care about. They're just making sure all the grammar is done. And then, you know, you get a proofreader at the end of it all to make sure that the line editor did their job. Because the unfortunate thing is that, and I love this stuff, you know, like you come into, you can grab, just like happened with when you decided to change your status and you missed the F, right? Okay. Because you knew what you were trying to write, right? We know what we're trying to say. And so we can read it 100 times and maybe miss the biggest mistake every single time we go through it. And then the next person picks it up and they catch 99% of it. But that's still, in a 100,000 word book, that's still a lot of little mistakes that are left over. And then that last person comes through and picks those ones up, because it's just the mental ability of how we read that we fix what it is that we're reading. If you can't afford anything, read your book out loud.
Yeah.
You know, read the entire thing out loud and you're going to catch quite a few of your mistakes. But just reading it inside your head, you're going to just jump over them.
Yeah.
And one of the other weird ways to do it is to read your book backward. No.
That sounds like read each. Yeah.
Yeah. So like you start on a page, you don't read the sentences backwards, but you read each sentence and then you go to the sentence above it and then the sentence above it. And you're reading those out loud like that, and you're going to catch a ton of stuff.
That's pretty interesting.
Because you're just reading it out of order. So
there was the, there's some famous art lesson for drawing, illustrating. Where a lot of people, they'll say, draw this picture, and they'll start drawing it, and then they'll start drawing what they think the picture should be like. So they said, turn the picture upside down, and then 9% of the time, they'll draw a much more accurate representation of what that picture is they're drawing, just because their mind is sort of taking over and sort of filling in the gaps that shouldn't be filled in. So I guess it's a similar thing, just sort of rejerking the mind.
Yeah, it really is. You know, with that type of art, you're seeing it as a shape instead of as a whole.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing on the page. You're seeing it as a sentence instead of a paragraph, instead of a chapter. You know, you're just seeing the one portion of it, and you can catch
the
majority of the stuff when you're looking at it that way. But it takes a lot of time. And I mean, you know, I mean, you've written this book and you've edited this book. You've spent months with this book. The last thing you probably want to do is read it backwards out loud.
No, so. Yeah, but Dan, yeah, for Lazarus, do you want to give that a quick backwards read for me?
not in a million years. I'd burned it before I read it backwards. So you say you're doing your developmental edits at the minute, and you're cracking back into the fiction world. Is your heart in fiction more, or is it in sort of the editing process? And what are your plans at the minute with fiction going forward?
So I do want to do small fiction. I'll never reach the pace, you know, that of 4 books per year, multiple books per year. That's just not where I'm at. Like I'm just slow at it, and because I just take my time with it, and I don't feel bad about it. but my real deal is story for change. Like I really want to get more into, you know, our world is dividing more and more all the time, and I want to, you know, work with authors who want to develop stories that can actually inspire people to make changes in their own life, make changes in the community that they live in. And it can be all down there at the bottom. I don't want to smack people over the face with it, but I want to help people figure out, you know, how you can inspire someone when they're reading a story. Cause that's where our biggest change can come as people, is when we're reading and when we're engaging in another world that we didn't know existed. You know, we didn't see it in that terms before, cause we'll never get that way when you're like, if I give you a history book, that's just a bunch of facts, and it doesn't resonate in the same way if I gave you a fictional history of a person that was living at that time and you could see it through their eyes.
Yeah, I think some people might underestimate the power that story has on other people or even on themselves. And I think I actually saw a perfect example this earlier, where someone took their 6-year-old son to go and see the Lego Batman movie, and now the child won't take off his Batman costume. And it's that kind of feeling of being submerged in the world. And I know that's a bit more of an outlandish one, where he might be pretending to be Batman, but I've come out of films like, I don't know, The Pursuit of Happiness or those kind of feel-good films where the story has been that powerful that you just want to be a better person because of it.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder. So I feel like I've got a good judgment of what right and wrong is. Like, you know, I'm polite. I'm nice to people.
I disagree.
You jerk. I sometimes wonder if, like, these bad people in the world, did they just not watch cartoons growing up? Because most of my, like, life lessons and morals are from, like, Spider-Man cartoons. And, like, these lessons are just are so embedded in those stories. I feel like they're missing out on, like, human goodness, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. The story can, and it struck me, actually, while I was stationed in Iraq during the war, you know, that it was the first time that I really saw, wow, you know, when you grow up like in a completely different culture of stories that are there, you come out differently. Like, I mean, there's still, you know, I've worked trained Iraqi soldiers. They still care about their family. There's still those basic connections in there. But at the same time, how they view things is very different than how I viewed things. And that is based on the stories that we were raised with. I mean, it kind of sounds silly when I always say this, when people kind of give me this weird look, but like the reality is based on the stories that we tell.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
We spin it into how we want it to be with the stories we tell. So
do you feel, this is a bit of a random question. So do you feel like the stories of the culture sort of dictate the cultural sensibilities, or do you feel it's the other way around? So I know England is very polite, very like dry sort of sense of humor. Do you feel like, and I know American stories tend to have more happy endings, they tend to have more dancing in the end credits, whereas our stories tend to end up with someone not winning or this is a big joke, really. Do you feel like, which way around do you think that is? And do you feel like we should get more American endings in our stories?
No, I don't think that the world needs everybody to have the same story. But I think that people need to understand and read more of each other's stories and share more of each other's stories so we can understand how they view the world and how they see it. Because that's where it really comes down to, is like, if we want to really bridge gaps, we need to understand where the other person's coming from. And we can do that through their story. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, because American ideology is we're going to win. And life's going to be great and good, and we're going to make it that way, you know, where someone else comes at it with a different kind of point of view. And you can just see that when you meet an American entrepreneur and how that spirit that they have with everything, because it's a movie, right? Yeah. You know, it's right there. But does that mean that it's absolutely doesn't mean that we should be taking ours and then moving it over there? Have you seen the movie Arrival?
No, not yet.
I've heard amazing things about it.
Yeah.
Yes. Watch that movie or read the short story, but the basis
is it based on
this,
a short story?
It is based on a short story. So a science fiction, can't remember I don't think it's called it Arrival for the short story, but it is a short story, and it explores this idea of language, right? That the language that we grow up with is what's going to give us the ability to see the world around us and understand and interpret it. And it could be, this is my own hypothesis, but it could be why Americans have a difficult time seeing the rest of the world, because we only speak one language. Like, we only have one language to draw from. And so we can only explain and think through that English terminology and things.
Yeah. There's also, in this world where we're all, you know, separating and all these wars and stuff, what's that saying? You should never read your enemy's poetry, because if you read your enemy's poetry, you can't see them as your enemy anymore. And you start to understand their thought processes and their way of life and their culture. So we should all read each other's poetry, basically.
I really like that. Where's that from?
I actually read it in a Hugh Howey short story. I think he was quoting someone else, but I don't know. So moving on from this woo-woo stuff. Is there any resources out there, books for story development or podcasts out there like your own that we should be listening to and watching?
Yeah. And reading? Definitely the Book Editor Show. Come watch me every once in a while when we do it. So there's a ton. Some of my favorites, Writing Shapely Fiction is a really great resource. Writing the Breakout Novel by Donald Moss is a fantastic book for editing, self-editing for authors, I think is what it's called. So it's a really good one as well. If you're interested in the stuff I've just been spewing forth here and talking about. The version one of the course, Punch Him in the Gut, Writing Fiction with Emotional Impact, is still available on on Udemy.com. Version two is going to be coming out this year, though, and we'll have a lot more information, but it's that whole idea of how to engage people emotionally with your story and get them to share it at the end, and why story matters, historically speaking, and how powerful it is. And yeah, it doesn't matter if you want to write a powerful story, but you have the option, you know, yeah, like you have the power to change the world if you want to.
Yeah. Why not? Give it a go.
Why not? Yeah. You know, you could. Or make money. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I just want you to know
whatever you
your
want office. To do.
Yep.
So, Dan, I think I'm pretty much out of questions. Is there anything else you wanted to ask?
A thousand things, but I think we should probably head towards the 10 question section.
Cool. So the quick fire round. So, Clark, so we've got a few questions we're going to throw them at you. You have to answer them extremely quickly. Otherwise, you failed the test. don't worry, not at all.
I love this part.
Dan, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. Are you ready, Clark?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay. Zombies or vampires?
Zombies.
Writing or editing?
Editing.
Favorite member of Sterling and Stone?
What's that?
Favorite member of Sterling and Stone?
Sean Platt.
Would you rather have a cold in the desert or a fever in the Arctic?
Fever in the Arctic.
What was the last book you read?
I just finished Cosmos and Religion, I believe is what it's called.
Favorite word?
Fired.
Least favorite word?
Fired.
Do you believe in Bigfoot?
No, I don't.
Where is the love?
In your heart.
Nice. And would you come back on the show at some point, please?
Absolutely. This has been a lot of fun.
Cool.
Fantastic.
And that way I could be prepared for 10 questions.
Yeah. No, I really like that section. I don't know why. It's just something quite... You get some really organic answers. We've got some corkers for some of the questions.
Yeah. cool. So the last thing, I guess, Clark, is where can we follow you and your work?
So go to clark-chamberlain.com, or you can just type in Clark Chamberlain. I'm the first page of Google results, and you can click on there. And actually, if you click on it, I'll send you how to better connect emotionally with your reader with some 5 simple steps that can put that together for you.
Cool. Excellent. So just want to say a quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, and listeners for listening, our patrons over at Patreon. Thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here, and thanks again to Clark Chamberlain. Okay, cheers.
Bye. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.